Don't Wreck Yourself features words and situations that are not appropriate for young listeners. This show is only for adults and unsupervised juvenile delinquents of exquisite taste and refinement. Each week, our hosts look into claims they find online, answer your questions, and say bad words!
Now your way is the only way, and my way is the only way to build a space between a hard place and a rock is all we do. But we'll entertain the conversation that leads us to the truth. What do we know? We're chimps and telephones and all no different to you.
Welcome to Don't Wreck Yourself. My name's Ryan Placetti, and I'm here to disentangle you from the Gordian knot of the internet's bullshit.
And now I introduce myself, I assume. Yes, I'm Brad.
Yeah, I mean, you can.
I thought maybe you'd say, and my guest today, but no.
No. This is a self-sufficiency thing. There's nobody who's better, and we still haven't introduced you.
Exactly. There's no appreciation, no love here, man.
The person who has taken time out of his beautiful Labor Day to put in the labor for this podcast is...
I'm Brad Hafford. I'm an archaeologist.
Dr. Brad Hafford.
Well, that is true. I'm an archaeologist at the University of Pennsylvania, and I study the origin of cities and ancient economics and many other things, and I run a YouTube channel called Artifactually Speaking.
So for those of you who haven't tuned into previous episodes featuring Dr. Brad, he and I know each other because he used to be my boss. There was a period of time where I aspired to engage in archaeology professionally, and Brad was my immediate supervisor, and I presume has nothing but rave reviews about the quality of my work.
Exactly. But surely your listeners have heard me on this podcast before, and maybe they'll get our stories.
That's true.
It's been a while, though.
Yeah, it has been a little while. One of the reasons why I invited Brad on the show today is because I came across a topic on Reddit that was kind of in his wheelhouse. It was wheelhouse adjacent. Yep. And there was also a topic that he had teased on his original appearance on the show that I wanted to revisit because I couldn't not. We'll get to that. But the first topic...
The second topic will amaze you, right? It's clickbait.
The first topic will delight you. The second topic will amaze you.
Exactly. So stay tuned.
We haven't planned a third topic. So presumably if there's a third topic, it will not only surprise you, but it will surprise us.
Yeah. There's a related one, but I don't think we'll take it as a topic. We'll fold it into the second topic, but yeah.
Yeah. So our first topic is actually coming from r/teachers. So Brad has been a working professor in higher education. So I think you as a teacher may have some commentary from that point of view, but the topic posted by user Lucius Dickus Maximus on r/teachers is, every year these kids come back with a new annoying quirk. Coin boys are apparently the new thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start by pointing out that Lucius Dickus Maximus is probably either teaching sex ed or classics.
Or both.
Maybe a Latin professor.
See, there's a topic we should go into, is the ancient sort of erotic things that they made, you know, and they were hidden away. And the old teachers used to give them strange names that no one would understand, that it was actually a rude topic, but they had to study it. But no one else could see these things. It was bizarre. Well, we can talk about that at some point, but not today.
Okay. Well, if you ever want to show me your secret collection of ancient pornography, I am always on board.
Well, even pornography comes from the Greek, porne meaning, you know, prostitute, and graphos to write or to depict.
Right, so, yeah. Yes. A visual representation of a prostitute. So, which means that a visual representation of a prostitute is not necessarily erotic in nature.
Maybe not.
Would a photograph of a fully dressed, of somebody who engages in the act, would a photograph of any sex worker be considered pornography, even if they're just, you know, wearing their Sunday best?
I don't know how to define it, but I know it when I see it. Isn't that what they say?
So for me as a parent, if I found out that my kid's teacher was on Reddit under the name Lucius Dickus Maximus, I think I would have some pretty hard questions for the school district.
And this topic is about a younger set of students, right? I mean, I teach mostly, you know, post-secondary and so college students, which are...
This topic is about high school students. Mm-hmm. So they write that they're in the 10th year of teaching, mostly freshmen, and they phrase it weirdly, but they say basically ever since the pandemic, there's always a new thing that students bring to school that they learned over the summer from the internet. Mm. And Their claim here is that there is a new flock of self-proclaimed coin boys who carry a quarter on hand at all times and constantly flip it. They have their entire personality revolve around coins, coin flips, and chance. They explain that when they did an icebreaker at the start of the class, four or five of the kids said some variation of I live by the coin and die by the coin, which is a pretty intense position to take.
But how new is that? Wasn't there a villain in Dick Tracy, Two-Face, that would always flip a coin or something like that?
Oh, that's Batman.
Oh,
it's Batman.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I'm so old that I was thinking that it went farther back. I thought there were two.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay.
You've got Two-Face and Batman, and more recently in the film No Country for Old Men, there's a character named Anton Chigurh who flips a coin to determine whether he's going to murder somebody.
See, now those are too big of decisions to try to put into that, I guess. Well, why would you ever do that? But yeah.
So the coin toss and the randomization of things is really interesting. And I think part of the appeal is that massive swing, because when you have a binary result, the human tendency is to make them the most extreme opposites possible.
Yeah.
So you might flip a coin between chocolate and vanilla.
Yeah.
But are you going to flip a coin between vanilla and French vanilla? Or are you just going to pick your favorite? I think it's the extremity that makes it so appealing to people. And that's part of why you don't see superheroes out there flipping coins on whether or not they're going to save people.
Right. See, I think that's the problem. You don't make big decisions like that. You might do it for a very minor decision.
Which is what makes it so scary for villains to do it, because they don't care enough. Like, they have left your well-being completely to chance.
Right.
They have no regard for any additional factors that might play in, like, is it good to kill somebody? Am I harming this person in the process? You know, it's that clinical detachment and the assignment of random chance to the outcome that is terrifying. And the reason why I wanted to bring this topic to you, because you are a numismatist.
Well, to an extent, yeah. I study money, ancient, really. And numismatics is all about coins, and coins come in the 7th century, late 7th century BC. And I'm studying third millennium, you know, 2,000 years before that. And yet I still think they had money, currency of sorts, right? And you wouldn't be able to flip a small, you know, I don't know, grain was coinage. And how are you going to flip that? Not exactly coinage. So, it was currency. There's a difference.
So I think it's safe to say that although you are a coin enthusiast, you would not count yourself to be a coin boy.
No.
Or even a coin man.
Because the coin boy thing isn't really about coins. It's about random chance, as we just mentioned. And so I like studying coins for the imagery on them and what does it mean and how does it help with trade and economics, and therefore that's why currency also did that, and money is just an abstract anyway. But you can watch my videos about that rather than letting me go into it. The thing that I do find interesting, though, is that I am also a gamer and always have been since I was quite young. And when my friends and I couldn't make our minds up what we were going to do, because, you know, you get bored and you're like, oh, let's do that. No, let's do this. So we would make a list, and we might have like 8 choices, and we would pull out our 8-sided die, and we would each roll. And we had to match. And whatever we matched, we had to do.
Okay.
But on that 8 choices, I think always the last one was pillage or something like that. You know, destroy the town. We never intended to do that. And if it matched, we weren't going to. But we put it on the list anyway.
Just in case. Yes,
just because it was silly. We were like, oh, okay. But there was no way we were going to try to do any harm or damage or anything.
But at the same time, even though we're kind of talking about this coin toss, like I said, I think the appeal there is the level of extremity between the two choices and the honestly terrifying oversimplification of it. But randomizing outcomes has been part of the human experience since antiquity. So you have casting of bones, dice, and then later on, even tarot cards and astrology, they all rely on some sort of randomness. Like even astrology, like when were you born?
Yeah.
You know, you have a 1 in 365.25 chance of being born on any particular day.
Right. And the stars move, I suppose, so maybe there's supposed to be a bit of difference over, you know, if you were born 200 years ago or something, maybe your horoscope would be different. I don't know. Because all of that's, it is partly random, but they're also trying to interpret things. And I'm trying to think of the ancient equivalent, and something like the Oracle at Delphi or something would know that the king was asking this question and might be influenced by that. Is it all random? Maybe it is. I think to an extent it is, but you still interpret the signs. Like you would take the liver out of a sheep or something, you know, and you would look for little blemishes on the liver. And this was a way of telling the future, you know.
And there's no way of controlling it for the on the part of I mean, there's the illusion of not being able to control it. Ultimately, right. The person doing the interpreting is, in fact, controlling it, and then perhaps ascribing the randomness to some sort of divine intervention or divine will.
One of the most famous oracles was, if you attack, a great empire will fall. But of course, it was his own empire. It was trying to say, okay, he thought, great, I will win. But of course, he lost and his own empire went.
So in that case, it's the illusion of randomness that's at work with fortune telling. So there's this sort of intermixture of divine purpose and chance, and randomization has been used to sort of separate the human element from decision making, or eliminate the appearance of partiality on or human intervention in outcomes. So if you look at like the ancient Athenians' use of clarotarian, it's a device that they would, you know, they'd put coins with names on them, and then they would use that, and there's some sort of mechanism to, I don't know, is dropping a ball or something in there that would select one of the coins, and that's how they chose people for civic leadership roles. So if you were eligible as a citizen, you could say, I am interested in serving, and then they would determine randomly from the candidates who would end up serving in these official capacities and forming the civic leadership of Athens. And then even today, that process carries on in the form of like jury pool selection. So you have a random group of eligible people that are randomly selected, and then, you know,
they're sorted by quality control. And all that.
Yeah. Then they get sorted, and then they, you know, they kind of tweak chance a little bit. But we use randomization to determine very important things in our society. You know, jury is given the power of life and death, and we're effectively selecting them randomly.
It's true. And it's supposed to be a jury of your peers. So it is supposed to be selected from just normal folks, right? That aren't going to necessarily be biased or hope. And the number is supposed to, this is statistical as well. 12 people, hopefully they won't all be on, you know, the extremes of either, you know, and therefore they'll balance each other out. But I think in the ancient world, they were often putting this randomization and claiming in a way that that was a higher power that guided that randomness. So they were trusting that whatever, the gods are going to tell me things. Whereas if you just flip a coin and say, should I murder someone? You're not thinking the coin is controlled. You're thinking, it's whatever. Doesn't matter to me either way. I'll do it. You know, and that's kind of, I think the motivation might be slightly different.
It's slightly different, but like, and I think you and I have, unless you've had a spiritual awakening since the last time we discussed religion, I'm reasonably certain that neither of us really ascribe divine will to anything.
Right.
And then when we see somebody else ascribing divine will to an act of random chance, it's still an act of random chance. I don't know that saying, if this is heads, my God says I should murder you, I don't know that that's any less scary because God has sanctioned the result.
It's still scary, but I think the person doing it perceives of it slightly differently. And
yeah,
I don't know.
It's sort of, you're washing your hands of responsibility for the decision.
Yeah. And that's a kind of good, all about washing your hands. It's a good segue to our other topic. If you're because even random chance is a topic with that, but you know, and
yeah, that's true. I'm not quite ready to move on yet. So there's a little bit more about this claim to examine. So, I mean, looking at this as a lifestyle, is coin boy a valid lifestyle choice? It's probably not a smart one, but it is not without precedent in our civic society.
I guess not. But I think as humans, we want a certain predictability around others in order to live together in close proximity. We don't want it to be a 50-50 chance that the guy next to me is going to kill me. You know, that's
fair. But let's be very real. You and I, we can be very real right now. There is nothing more chaotic than a teenager. Well, and there's nothing more terrifying. So perhaps this is a power. Do teenagers need to be absolved of responsibility through random chance, or should they learn to take responsibilities? I don't know that coin boy is a healthy lifestyle.
Not at all, I think. But
that leads to some good news. Mm. I wanted to find out more about coin boys, so I did what any self-respecting person in the internet age would do, and I Googled it. And what I found was there's actually been a little bit of reporting on this post. It kind of went viral a little bit. Some people picked it up on Twitter. And, you know, there's a bunch of people who are like, oh, coin boys, that's great. They're cheering them on. And then there's obviously the reaction like, oh, man, this is crazy. What do the kids think of next? I found an article that was actually written by knowyourmeme.com, which is a site which performs a task not unlike what we claim to provide on this show. So they looked into it, and what they found is that there's no reference. Nobody can find any reference on the internet about coin boys prior to this post. So there is no older reference, which means this post seems to be the originator, which would seem to call into question the fact that these kids could come to school living by the coin and dying by the coin based on something that they saw online over the summer.
Well, right. They didn't necessarily get it from that, yeah. I think, but you could get it from anything. We've seen this sort of thing in movies, like I said, but anyway.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly exists in pop culture that they have access to. The existence of Two-Face as a Batman villain makes this, you know, the concept available to them. However, Lucius Dicus Maximus has a posting history on Reddit. And in the weeks leading up to this post, prior to exposing the hard reality of coin boys in our local high schools, they've also claimed to have multiple other professions, including culinary associate at a retirement center, working for an import-export company, being a ventriloquist hitman.
Okay. Does that mean you kill ventriloquists or you have the dummy and you're the, I don't know, you shoot the dummies? I don't know.
So apparently the ventriloquist hitman post is this person claims to be a professional that you can hire on the dark web to go and harass somebody with a ventriloquist dummy. So it's more of a pointed social shaming or embarrassment rather than an actual literal puppet murder. Or murderous puppet, yeah. However you choose to interpret that. He also claimed to be a rising high school senior. So I think this is a person who is creative, who has an understanding of what is interesting in pop culture and the sorts of things that can potentially go viral on a site like Reddit. Mm. So this person is just on Reddit. They call it karma farming. So they're just farming up votes and trying to get their creative writing projects really out into the world.
But therefore, by talking about it now, we're just perpetuating it. Shouldn't we just, you know, the more chance you give for people to pick up this silly, you know, I'm going to let the coin decide.
Okay, so this is a public service announcement. by talking about this subject, we're not endorsing the coin boy lifestyle.
Kids, do not try this at home.
And even though this coin boy story is likely fake, it has, you know, as you said, sparked an interest and enthusiasm from people on the internet. And sometimes a thing isn't a thing until it's a thing. Oh, yeah. And the results of this, like this one random fake post from Reddit, could result in us living in a world where our future politics and major civilization defining choices are determined by the flip of a coin.
Maybe.
So there you go. You know, it kind of reminds me of the next topic reminds me of like, I'm going to show you something that's never been seen before and will never be seen again. Then you open a peanut and you eat the peanut.
Oh, right. Because the peanut.
That's kind of how the next topic feels, right? Because we've been talking about it's like, this is a topic.
Right. And how do you
introduce never it? Heard.
I mean, you've never heard this part of it, but everybody knows the topic in general because, you know, everybody goes to the bathroom every day. Exactly.
Everybody poops. In my house, we sing a song about it. It's everybody's pooping because the toilet's hungry. And what, you know, it's even more messed up about that. Yes, we are potty training a 3-year-old, uh-huh. But he has never heard that song. It's just a song that my wife and I sing to each other.
Mm, okay.
You know, and that's one of those things where randomization occurs. Yeah.
Well, do you flip a coin before you go? Or I don't know. Or should I go here?
Every time I sit down on the toilet, it's a coin toss as far as what I'm going to get. It's either going to be a good outcome or a bad outcome.
Well, in the ancient world, of course, the whole topic, it's studied, but probably not enough. You know, how sanitation, right? We can be cleaner about the way we talk about it. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, that's just it. Like, sanitization is such a huge part of the development of civilization as a whole because it's the ability to avoid disease and infection, which is absolutely a threat to any large gathering of people.
Yeah.
So as civilizations become more complex and you're able to sustain larger population centers, diseases spread and evolve more effectively.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So studying the origin of cities, you have to think, well, first of all, what is a city? One of the main parts of that definition would be large population. Where is the cutoff line? I don't know. But usually large population in pretty dense, you know, close quarters. And the closer you are to your neighbors and everything else, the more disease vectors there are, and particularly waste products. Well, when I first started studying this, we tended to just sort of say, well, you know, they just left the city and crapped in the fields or whatever. okay, but yeah. We all know that sometimes the need hits you very quickly and you're probably not going to be able to make it to the city gate, right?
Believe me, I know.
So, I mean, Ur itself is about 1 kilometer wide and nearly 2 kilometers long. So if you were in the center of that, you know, you'd have a long way to go to get to a gate.
Yeah. And you are referring to the ancient city of Ur, a location that we are both intimately familiar with.
Right. Where I'm the field director. It's in southern Iraq. It's one of the first cities in the world.
Brad's first appearance on the show, we actually talked about Ian Atzer, which is the most viral ancient copper merchant ever.
True, because he had complaints about his copper, right? And we've got, that's a great thing about ancient Mesopotamia, is you get a lot of texts, you know, even personal letters written in cuneiform. And this is how we know a bit more about sanitation as well, or their understanding of it. So if people couldn't necessarily go all the way outside the city to do their business, right? They had to do it, well, a lot of people would say, well, they just throw it into the canal, because you'd often have a kind of river running through the city, you need water. And even today, there are cities where they just dump sewage into their, you know, this is a bad thing, but.
I have 5 people living in a house with 3 bedrooms and 1 bathroom, mm-hmm. So there are times where I just have to go out and shit in the bushes, so. Things are getting crowded. My kids are getting older, and the older they get, the more time they're going to spend in the bathroom, yeah. And the more time I'm presumably going to be huddled in a thicket passing stool.
Well, yeah, exactly. There are all of these words that we use, yes, and there are a lot in cuneiform too, which are fascinating. I always thought that they must have also had certain ceramic vessels that they might use, because chamber pot, right?
In the chamber pots are absolutely
in the 19th century, that was big, right? You needed these things, and you would have what they called night soil men who would come by and pick up your chamber pot and dump it outside the city, right? So you paid people to get rid of your waste, and
you outsource running towards the city gate,
essentially. But I wonder why we haven't identified a shape of pot that, you know, because you wouldn't want to confuse your chamber pot with your soup dish.
Yeah. Right.
So, and I'm sure they didn't, but they have a very specific shape when we know of what a chamber pot is in the 19th century. We know that bedpans look very different from the hospitals today. You know, you're not going to confuse that. But we've never found a pot that we would say, oh, yeah, this would fit well, and people probably used it to crap in.
Well, I think what you're looking for in that sort of a pot is something with a metal hinge attached to it and a small U on top that would flip up.
Yeah, but the hinging them was difficult at the time, and it was probably just a ceramic bowl. Anyway, yes.
I'm just saying, just look for the one
looks
that looks
like a toilet.
Yeah. The material hasn't even changed, because we still make our toilets out of ceramic.
We do, yeah, porcelain, so.
Like, is there any real difference? The only thing a toilet is a toilet is a chamber pot with indoor plumbing.
Yeah. What about one on an airplane? You know, it's made of like metal or something, right? But okay.
Fair enough.
And many bedpans are made of metal. But primarily it's ceramic. Anyway, I haven't identified these, but there are cuneiform words. Sumerian Dug Kisi literally means piss pot. So we know that they knew of a pot that they could piss in. So...
Now, I've read that piss pots, like I've read that the etymology of like not having a pot to piss in mm-hmm. is a reference to the fact that you could, if you had a pot, you could pee in it and then sell that pee to the local laundry because your pee is high in ammonia and it was used in cleaning clothes.
Right. Urine was used for a number of things, like curing in the tanning process, I think, and in tweed mm-hmm. cloth and things like this. So
the act of not having a pot to piss in means you can't afford to sell your own piss.
It's probably true. But I don't know what they did in the ancient world for that. But the Akkadian for it is karpot shenati. It's the same thing. It's a piss pot. And
okay,
so they were probably also throwing waste into the river, into the canals that came through. But this, of course, is a really big disease vector. Cholera in particular is transmitted that right. way. And there have been cholera outbreaks in a lot of places. And there are still places where a lot of sewage ends up in the river or nearby.
Yeah, like I think the most recent major cholera outbreak was probably Haiti.
Yeah.
There was a cholera outbreak there, what, 7 years ago, give or take, 10
right.
years ago?
And there were cholera cases in Iraq where I was in 2015 near Ur. We had a cholera square and Woolley, cholera scare. And Woolley reports one when he was digging there in the 1920s, and he had to try to make sure that none of his workers were going to get ill. But it makes me think of, in London, there was a thing called the Great Stink. I don't know if you've heard about this. Okay. This is one I thought we could fold in as a topic. We should talk about it some other time. 1858, it got so bad because they were dumping so much into the Thames that it was terrible. Charles Dickens wrote about it. And he said, I've got a quote here from him. I can certify that the offensive smells, even in that short whiff, have been of a most head and stomach distending nature. So at that point, they had to close down the Houses of Parliament because they were right on the river and it was so stinky. Yeah. They had to build a new sewer system, a pumping station. It took them about 7 years. In 1865, they opened this new thing.
So all of London just smelled like shit for 7 years.
Well, certainly near the rivers, it was just awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was partly because that was a heat wave at that time and that exacerbated all the smells. Anyway, it just shows that what I'd always thought was, oh, we hadn't learned to control this until the industrial age. But I think it's always been around. People know stinks and they don't want to go to a stink.
Yeah.
So in these Akkadian tablets, you know, that tell us that they were kind of afraid. Well, first of all, indoor toilets did exist. You know, a lot of people think, oh, they didn't even have them. Well, they did. Every house that I've dug at Ore has a drain, and usually they have two or more. And the main drain in the courtyard is probably just to get rid of rainwater. It does rain there. You know, you think total desert, but no, there are some rains. It's not a lot. But so the one that's in the open courtyard is probably mainly to drain off there. You might go and pee in it sometimes. I don't know. But you'll always find another drain in a very narrow room. And that was probably a roofed space. And I think it's a toilet. There are ones we identify clearly as toilets. They're usually beneath the stairs. And the floor is often covered in bitumen for waterproofing. And it has a drain. And sometimes there's even like bricks there for squatting or even occasionally built up enough that you could sit on it. It's like a slot drain. So these are clearly toilets.
For those of you keeping track at home, bitumen is essentially asphalt or crude oil.
Yeah,
it's tar that's bubbled up. So it can be used to waterproof, which is interesting because it's like you mentioned that they have waterproof flooring, presumably to keep, you know, waste from seeping into the floor and being a permanent stink.
And because these things are vertical drains beneath it, so it doesn't just run off into a sewer system. It runs straight down into the ground. And I hate digging them because they're just so complex. You know, they're ring drains. So ceramic ring on top of ceramic ring going down 5 meters, sometimes 8 meters deep. And these rings have holes pierced in them, and then they're packed with broken pottery around them to let the water drain out. So not only did you pee in there and fluids, but you would also dump water down to sort of flush it. And the water is going to be everywhere. And there's a word for that, musatu, which is the rinse water. It's the water used to rinse your backside and the hand that you wiped your backside with, which, you know.
Right.
And there's a phrase called beat musati, which is the house of the rinse water. And that's like a euphemism, like we would say lavatory or washroom, you know?
Yeah.
You wash there, but you're also doing
other
things.
It's a water closet.
Yeah.
I remember when I was taking French in high school, they would actually have two separate rooms. You know, there's the salle de bain, which is the bathroom, the room that you bathe in. And then there was the toilet.
Right.
Traditionally, they're not always in the same space because why would you shit in the place that you want to go to get clean?
Right. There's that old phrase.
So I think what we need to do is get to the exciting part of this topic.
We will. But I wanted to get some of this, that a lot of houses were dug at Ore, and they claimed that only 6.2% of those houses had these toilets, the identifiable ones. And yet, as I've been digging there, I find that these other less identifiable ones, but clearly it's a drain in a narrow space.
Yeah.
I think it is much more common than just 6% of the houses that have these indoor toilets. But they were kind of afraid of them. And I think that's what you're getting at. Or they knew that there could be problems in those things.
Right.
In one case, that beat musati is, well, I mean, more than one, is changed for the word beat shittim. And shittim literally means fart. So this is the house of farts. So they had a euphemism like we might washroom, but then they also had shit house or something, you know, as a word. So they could use either
which
one.
Which we also have. Right.
And there are phrases that say warnings against, you know, particularly on a particular day. I guess they think it's an evil day. And they say that one shall not enter the fart house, lest one be filled up with wind.
Wow.
And there's another one that says, not just filled up with wind, it says, lest one be attacked by shoelock. And here's the thing that I think we were trying to get to. It's taken us a while. There's a demon named Shoelock that they thought haunted the fart house. He's also associated with date groves and with abandoned settlements, because I think these are also places where you might go to crap, basically.
Yeah.
And they know that there's this stink and that it might transmit disease, but they didn't quite understand disease, right? They thought they were caused, this illness was caused by a demon. So
yeah,
they attributed this to Shulak, and he's depicted as a lion standing on his haunches. So he's kind of anthropomorphic. He can walk, but he's a lion. And he could attack you. And, oh, Andrew George wrote a great article about this, and some of his quotes are pretty funny. He says, squatting in the dark in a Near Eastern lavatory is seldom a pleasant experience, even for those who are not in fear of a lion demon springing out of the depths of a filthy pit to bite their bare behind and take their life. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Like, his nickname, Lurker in the Fart House, is just such a perfect.
Yeah. He's also known as, you know, Dirty Hands, which of course makes sense if you haven't washed yourself well enough.
What are his other nicknames? I'll just.
The Upholder of Evil.
The Upholder of Evil. Yep. Like, and you know, it's funny because I talk about when I get sick, my body has, and this is where, for our listeners who are squeamish about such things, first of all, you should not have tuned into this show. And I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but my body has, my family will get sick. My wife will get sick. I will just get the, like, for me, almost every disease is a gastrointestinal disease. I might not show the signs of that head cold, but I'll know that I'm fighting something off. And I call that getting the evil out. So,
well, so he is the upholder of evil.
He's the So I have done personal combat with Shulak, the fart house demon.
Yeah. And the tablets say that he can either, you know, just bite you, or he can possess you by entering your body. And, you know, Andrew George says, presumably it did this by taking advantage of people at their most vulnerable while squatting to defecate, ano aperto, which, you know, I guess whenever you put something into Latin, it's more polite, which is why we would talk about also the, you know, words for rude
would you
things.
Would you mind translating
ano aperto? Open anus, basically, is literally what it means.
Okay, that's what I thought. That's
aperto,
what I thought.
Like, you know, abierto in Spanish, open, and ano, yes, is...
Oh, I mean, I think you and I have both squatted over holes in the ground and done our business. You know, that style of bathroom is, while not the standard in most cities,
still
in the near and Middle East, it is still common in rural environments. Yep. And in some cases, there will still be a porcelain overlay to that hole in the ground that you're shitting in. And it might be, you know, over a drain where you would pour water down.
Right.
You know, there's no flush mechanism or anything like that. There's usually just like a pitcher of water next to it and then a can for you to put your toilet paper in.
And there's a very specific design to that pitcher. It's got this long spout, because when you pour it into that spout, it will sort of jump up. It's like a bidet when you pour it in the right way, because it's a butt pipe, basically.
It gets you the velocity you need to get your butt clean.
So there is a design element, and that's been around for a long time. People understood this, but they were worried about it too. So the symptoms of some of the diseases that Shulak was said to cause, it sounds like a stroke in one case, you know, in many cases, actually. Yeah. It says your left side goes limp and your face would be paralyzed. And Andrew George, in his article, theorizes that part of this might be from what he calls straining too hard at stool. You know, it could bring on a stroke or an aneurysm, I suppose. And he says that King George II in 1760 died of that, straining too hard, apparently, on the toilet.
You could argue that King George II dying on the toilet actually set the stage for the American Revolution, because King George III was an untenable leader. He was an untenable monarch.
Well,
and had King George II not shit himself to death
right,
16 years prior, perhaps the United States would still be a commonwealth of the British of the British Empire, or you know.
And it's all Shulak's fault. And maybe he killed Elvis too. I don't know.
Shulak does target kings.
He does. That's right. But they wanted a way to, you know, fight against Shulak. And by the first millennium, so it's a bit later than most of what we're talking about, because we're talking, you know, Middle Bronze Age material that I've mostly been talking about. But he extends into the Late Bronze and Early Iron Age.
So there's a form of spiritual warfare then in the bathroom.
Well, kind of. they suggested burying these little statuettes in front of the laboratory of a lion centaur. Now, that's just, to me, is a weird phrase. It's, you know, a centaur is usually a man's torso and head, and yet
or a woman. Horses. Centaurs yeah. come in all genders.
The body is of a horse. Well, in this case, the body would be a lion, but the, you know, and he's always drawn as a man in this case, the lion centaur.
Yeah.
And his name is Ormahlulu, and he apparently was the enemy of Shulok. So if you could get the enemy of Shulok to help you, then you could drive him away.
Help.
Yeah. It's like Pazuzu. Who would
I'm just like the recruiting effort there. Like that is an awkward phone call. Just
will you drive this demon out of my toilet?
I'm about to take a shit.
That's why you bury the little statues of him in front of the laboratory. So he's always there and he'll help you, right? That's
yeah.
the whole idea behind it.
It's like putting a hidden camera in your bathroom,
but I suppose.
You know, it's just you and the eyes of the gods. God knows what you're doing in there, and he will keep you safe.
He sees you when you're sleeping. No way, that's Santa.
as somebody who has fallen asleep on a toilet before, do you have any advice for anybody who encounters the demon Shulok as far as fending him off beyond simply burying a statuette?
Well, right. If you can't get hold of a lion centaur to defend you, make sure that you wash. That's the main thing they were saying. He's called Dirty Hands, and it's the house of rinse yeah. water, because you have to rinse well enough, both your backside and the hand, because they would use water and the left hand usually, you know, to clean. And then you've got to wash that yeah. left hand. So I guess employees must wash hands before returning to work.
All right. You heard it here first. Company policy. No demonic ass possession allowed. Right.
Well, the last thing that I thought was really interesting on this was in the city of Nineveh, which, of course, we're talking pretty late. It's first millennium. Again, we're in the Iron Age. But they found the library of Assurbanipal, and it had lots of tablets of very interesting stuff. And a lot of them were found in room 41. And they,
which also had a big hole in the ground surrounded by bitumen.
Room 40 did. It's right behind it. So it's the annex to the toilet. And I kind of get this image. Did they walk through and say, I'm going to pick up my reading material and go into the
toilet? Yeah.
I mean, some people have suggested, no, they fell into that room from a room above. We don't really know. But a lot are saying, no, it was really a one story. So why are a lot of the library tablets in the room right in front of the toilet? Anyway.
Well, what would the lighting situation have been in there?
Well, that's another big question. In these narrow rooms where we have the drain, you would think it would be very dark because it was probably roofed.
I was going to say, that's not normally how I envision going blind in the bathroom. Right. it's all the reading.
Right. How could you read? Well, you know, and certainly in the Bronze Age and in throughout, they were burying their dead in the houses. And they have this one room where we think they had a half roof over it, and part of it was exposed. So it's possible that the toilet had, I don't know, a kind of chimney above it.
Yeah.
Because another question with these long drains, you'll find a brick over them with a hole, and sometimes that hole will be covered by another brick. But if you seal up yeah. a drain like that, gases can actually build up. It's happened in the Great Stink. Methane starts to build up, and it can actually explode. So you might not want mm-hmm. to seal it off too well, but you don't want to smell it either. But I wonder if toilet explosions were part of Shulok. I don't know.
So. Shulok will breathe fire. Yeah. I've exploded a lot of toilets, mostly public ones.
Anyway, yeah.
So Shulok is the manifestation of all of our bathroom horrors.
It's yeah. And from as early, well, gosh, they had drains back, you know, 3000 BCE. We start hearing about yeah. Shulok by about 2000 BCE. So they knew about all of these things and they were worried, but they didn't necessarily know how to combat them. They dug deeper drains sometimes, you know. They started doing yeah. a bit of horizontal drainage, but often it would just empty into the street, which is also bad. So, I don't know.
Can confirm. I've been to places with, and I'm sure you have too, with above ground sewage systems yeah. that run right down the middle of the street.
Yep. And it's pretty awful. But, well, it takes a lot of engineering, a lot of money to build really good sewer systems. So you can see why they wouldn't have been able to do it necessarily, even if they had the technology. But I do wonder, how do they dig such a, you know, an 8-meter pit? Because they're usually not all that wide. So yeah. when you first dig your drain, do you have your kids do it because they're small and they can dig down that far? Do you drop them down inside there? I don't.
I mean, child labor, that outlawing child labor is a relatively recent event. Mm-hmm. And even then, it's not universal. You can go to another part of the galaxy and find child labor.
Where's the galaxy? You've been to other parts of it?
Well, I mean, if we're going to start declaring things universal, we should own up to the fact that does imply a certain level of scale that is
exactly
unachievable.
I've just been working on a video that I'm calling the nicest toilet at Ur, because we found a pretty good one and I wanted to talk about it. That'll be released. It'll be a while, but people can watch for that.
Can you give us a teaser? What's one of the features of this toilet?
Well, it's well paved, you know, and so the hole is rather nice, but also it has this rounded back wall.
But no, that's nice because you can get comfortable as you read your clay tablets. Yeah. Stored in your fart house adjacent library annex.
Yep. And it was found at the corner of a house, and it seems to have been sealed off at one point, so it preserved well. They basically just blocked it up. Maybe, I don't know, it was full. And they said, oh, we're done with that one.
Well, I learned a lot about toilets today. Thank you, Brad. Because, and don't get me wrong, I knew a little bit about ancient toilets, but not Mesopotamian toilets. I've certainly encountered Roman toilets during the, you know, various sites that I've had the opportunity to visit. And a Roman toilet is basically two bricks jutting out of a wall. Mm. It's actually a series of bricks jutting out of a wall. So that way you can sit with your friends and poop into a small drainage ditch. So what they'll do is they'll route water through. So you're actually pooping into a small man-made stream that carries the water away and presumably dumps it into their drinking source.
And many medieval toilets in castles were just, you know, projecting over the moat and you just crap directly into the thing. There's a show Blackadder, you know, it was in the 80s or something, you know, Rowan Atkinson played Blackadder. And in the one where it's Elizabethan, so 16th century, he's selling his house and the people who are buying it say, they ask about the toilets and they say, you mean you crap out of the window? And he's like, yes. And they say, good, I can't stand those dirty indoor things.
So yeah, if you ever look at a castle and you see a little bit jutting out from the side, that is the mechanism by which your feces would leave that building.
Yep.
If you've never pooped off of a four-story building, you have not lived. That is a beautiful piece of history that hopefully we'll get back to. You just get back to our roots. Make pooping great again. Shitting like a king is when you have to wait a few seconds to hear the plop.
Hopefully it doesn't mean you die on the toilet, because we just said kings have often died on them, I guess.
If you're looking for a musician who's the king of his craft, who hasn't died pinching one off, we encourage you to listen to the music of Rick Reynolds, who has been kind enough to allow us the use of his song, United, from the album Portals in Progress, which in of itself may be a reference to today's topic. You can find him on iTunes, Amazon, and Spotify. You can also find him on YouTube, where he has a series of behind-the-scenes videos for the new metal tour. He's currently playing on the road with the band Tantric. He's got a lot of great behind-the-scenes content, so go check it out. Brad, would you like to reinforce your social medias?
Well, I think mainly it's my YouTube channel, so please do check out Artifactually Speaking on YouTube, and you'll find a number of videos. Not many of them have to do with toilets. One eventually will, but but there's a lot about the ancient world in general.
You can only hold it in for so long.
Oh, jeez.
And if you would like to find this podcast, you can find us, you can send us email at wreckyourpod@gmail.com. You can find us on my favorite Twitter clone, Blue Sky, at wreckyourpod.com. And you can find us on other social media platforms at wreckyourpod. We are expressly not answering or sending messages over Elon Musk's hellhole that used to be Twitter, the platform currently known as X, which, as we all know, is a free speech platform. But you no longer have the freedom to block Elon Musk, which was my favorite feature on that website. So if between now and next week you find yourself grunting on a toilet...
Beware of Shulock. We need signs that say that to put in our toilets now.
Actually, that's not a terrible idea. So that is a great merch idea. So if between now and next week you find yourself grunting on a toilet, obsessively tossing a coin in the air to make major life decisions, and you don't have time to wait for our next episode, we encourage you to check yourself.
Don't wreck yourself.
We are united, but we're so far apart.